Welcome back to Jump Scare. I'm Chad.
And I'm Betty.
And today we're here talking with Andrea Perron, the author of the House of Darkness, House of Life trilogy, which is the true story behind the events of the Conjuring film. Hello, how are you doing today?
I'm very well. I really appreciate you inviting me onto your broadcast.
Oh, we're really glad to have you. We just sat down and watched the movie again the other night.
Oh, okay. Well, it bears no actual resemblance to the real story, just saying. But it's a good movie.
That's one of our questions. That was one of our questions there was.
We know that, you know, films are going to be adaptations when they're taken from novels. But in this case, this is something you actually live through. With everything that you experienced in the house, what's the main encounter that sticks out the most in your mind?
Well, you know, they did their best with The Conjuring. But the thing that sticks out most for me, they went Hollywood formula and method. And they basically made the story into something that they thought would sell and that would people would be most familiar with. Mm-hmm. And so I just need to clarify that my mother was not possessed and there was no exorcism in our house. What did happen was that Ed and Lorraine Warren came with a group of people one night in August of 1974. And insisted that it was necessary for there to be a seance in our house, insisted that my mother was being oppressed and that she was close to being possessed and that they needed to attend to the offending spirit. My father didn't want anything to do with it. My mother just kind of folded like, you know, a wet towel onto the, She really was, became almost dissociative, did not interact with, make eye contact with, you know, slowly, gradually over the course of the first half an hour that they were there. And what I saw happen in the house that night was way worse than anything that they could have come up with for the movie. I don't even really know how it could be recreated. But that is the thing that protrudes into my memory, is at the forefront of my memory in terms of bad experiences in the house, because that was the first night and the only time in my life that I've seen pure evil, that I've seen something evil and something not of this world. And I won't call it a demon because I don't know what a demon is, and I didn't see anything, there was no apparition. Whatever it was literally went into my mother and transformed her in front of at least a dozen people. And then she was lifted in the chair that she was in and thrown in a split second from the middle of our dining room to our parlor floor. And when her head hit the floor, everyone present in that house that night thought they had just seen her die. And that was horrible. So much more horrible than what they did. You know, what they did with The Conjuring was very compelling in that scene. And I know very shocking to a lot of people. But that's not what happened. There was a chair involved. That's the only likeness. There was no vomiting blood. There was no, you know, my mother was in obvious excruciating pain and she was crying out and speaking in a language that does not exist on this earth.
I read an article stating that you and the family were invited to go on set of The Conjuring, but I guess something happened on set and your mom did not. She had to leave and did not want to return. I mean, I wouldn't either if I, you know, experienced something so horrifying.
Well, there's like a billion things written about this movie and our story, most of which are inaccurate, unless it comes directly from myself or my family members. It's mm-hmm. mostly, you know, it's something always seems to get lost in translation. But it wasn't that. We were invited out to the set my father and my four sisters, April, Nancy, Christine, and Cindy. I'm so glad that April had to have, you know, got to have that experience before she passed away in 2017. Thank you. I'm so glad that she, you know, she got to be a part of that. But it was my mother decided at the very last minute not to go. At the very last minute, like all the plans were made, everything was done, the car was packed, you know, everything was, and she's like, I've changed my mind, I'm not going to go. And I thought that it was very strange that the same thing happened with the Perrin family on set, you know, because Lily Taylor at the last minute decided not to come to the set that day. And she was literally the only person associated with that film that wasn't there.
Wow,
literally the only one. And there was an incident on the set, and it was a supernatural wind. Excuse me, it's allergy season. I'm strangling. Oh,
no
lovely. It was just a wind that came through and just, you know, blew the boons and the cameras and the backdrop and the everything all over the place. And my sister Christine and I looked at each other, you know, because we knew there was, you know, we looked around. We were on 5 acres of land. The trees weren't moving anyplace else on the property.
Wow.
It was just coming directly over us. And right after it happened, you know, I nodded to Christine. She nodded to me. And we kind of said, Bathsheba's curse. Which was kind of a running joke in the family for about 45 or 50 years because, you know, it's like if we got a hangnail, we blame it on that, you know, we blame it on her. That was over. We finished the interview. They put all the equipment back in place, and it swooped through. It was like something swooping through, I guess is the best way to describe it. And then it was done. It was over. And everything got put back, and we finished the interview. And as soon as we did and we got away and signed all of our paperwork and everything, everybody turned on their cell phones again because they had to turn them off to do the interview. And our cell phones were blasted with messages that my mother had fallen and broken her hip, like, you know, half an hour before, which is exactly when this thing occurred. And by the time we all got back from Wilmington, North Carolina to Atlanta, Georgia, she had come out of surgery and she just looked at me and she said, she was in recovery and she was heavily sedated. I'll give it that. But she just looked at me and she said, I haven't felt that presence in more than 40 years. And you know, and then she laid down and went to sleep and didn't wake up till the next day. And she doesn't even remember saying that, but all my sisters were there, her nurse, her doctor, my niece, my nephew, you know, the room was packed with people. And we had all just come in together from driving 9 hours back from Wilmington. And so that's exactly what happened. So whatever you read was kind of sort of like that, but not really. And I just told you what exactly happened.
Well, that's even more intense than what we had heard.
Yeah. Well, that's often the case. I think The Conjuring is the only film that's ever been made that instead of, you know, exaggerating events based on a true story, they toned it so far down that it's just different. It's different than what really happened. What really happened was very ugly and very intense, and you know, I give and Lorraine Warren credit for keeping their cool in a very, very bad situation, you know, but they left the house that night not knowing whether or not my mother was dead or alive on the floor in the parlor, and they came back 2 months later and came to the door to see if she was still among the living. And that was the one and only time she didn't let them in and said, okay, we're done here.
Yeah, I can't, you know, I would think you would check before you left that night, you know?
Oh, no, my mother was unconscious when they left.
Wow.
My father threw them out of the house. It was very ugly.
When your family was finally able to leave the house, did you experience anything else in your new home?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't think. I don't think I was prepared to jump from the farmhouse to the house in Georgia. But yes, and in fact, I'm glad you asked it that way, because when we left the house in Rhode Island, my sister Nancy had agreed to stay on indefinitely as the caretaker of the property while the new owners prepared it and restored it to its true colonial antiquity. And it kind of broke up. It broke up our family. We never lived under the same roof again as a family. All the rest of us moved to Georgia, and my sister Nancy stayed behind at the farm, and was there for quite a while, the better part of a year, I do believe. But when we were leaving, my mother and I were driving. We had a little green Mustang. No, it was, I'm sorry, silver. Not that that matters. I don't know why I mentioned it. But we were pulling out of the driveway, and we were kind of going in a caravan, you know, with a moving truck and a station wagon and three vehicles. And as we were pulling out, we looked back to wave at Nancy on the front porch, and there was an apparition standing behind her in the window, looking out the dining room window. And my mother just gasped, and I said, "I see her."
Wow.
And that's it. And that's all we said to each other, and we left. And when we got up on the road, pulled out of the driveway and got up on the road, my mother said, "I will never come back to this place." And she has been true to her word all these years. She has never gone back to the farm. She's 81 years old now.
Wow,
and
I don't.
We left in 1980, in June of 1980.
Wow, so I can't say if I blame her.
No. And, you know, my sister Cindy will never return to the house. But we drove for 2 days to get to our new house in Florida. And my sister Cindy and a family friend had taken the horses down about 2 weeks prior and got the house ready to receive the rest of us as we finished packing up the farmhouse. And when we got there, we pulled into the driveway, this big, huge, spacious driveway, at about 6 o'clock, 6:30, somewhere in there in the morning. And Cindy, we called ahead, and she was standing in the front window, like a full-length window on that house. I am really having, it's like I'm allergic to air itself tonight. pardon me. And she was standing there holding a cup of coffee, and the exact same apparition that we saw standing behind Nancy at the farmhouse in Rhode Island was now in Georgia standing behind my sister Cindy, who is the same woman.
Wow.
And my mother grabbed my hand on the steering wheel, and she said, "It isn't over. It will never be over." And she was right. It has never been over.
Wow.
Now, we have you on to discuss some of the experiences that went on during your stay, the 10 years you lived in the house with your family. But there's actually a unique experience that's being offered through Dark Zone TV. And we would like for you to discuss kind of what is going to be happening on May 9th. We're going to have a kind of a live look into the house, and you're going to be a part of that.
Yes, and I'm really delighted, because this is giving me an opportunity to work with a couple of friends who are producers, Jay Blumke and Scott Perlman, who were the original producers of Ghost Hunters and then later Ghost Hunters International. And they came to me, a couple of months ago and said, "Would you be interested in doing something with us around the farmhouse?" And I was like, "Oh my God, that's the only place that's ever felt like home to me." And, you know, I'm always happy to be there and do things there. If you want to shoot something, yeah, you know, I'd be happy to. I've done a number of events and since about June of last year when the new owners bought it. And then, of course, COVID-19. And everything had to change, and there would be no shoot at the farm, and there would be no gathering at the farm. And so they had to come up with a new way to do an old idea. And instead, they came up with a new way to do a new idea, which is to basically use that as the backdrop and the setting in virtual land, in Google world, to have a paracon. And to bring in, you know, really some of the very best people in the field. But above and beyond that, I'm so thrilled because it gives an opportunity to the people who have been the foot soldiers, the ones that are out there doing the investigations, doing the work, collecting the data, you know, just approaching this in a very mature, in a thoughtful way. And I think, you know, that that's very, very important. And to have a backdrop of the farmhouse split on like 12 screens and covering most of the square footage of the house gives us that rare opportunity to see if something happens. It might not. It could be that nothing at all happens over the course of 8 days. It could be that absolutely nothing happens. Or it could be that this is like a grand experiment. It could be like all these paranormal people with all these different experiences and, you know, bringing their own knowledge and their own work to a setting in the ether that's connected in with the farmhouse. Will that or will that not trigger events in the farmhouse? For me personally, what I find of most value is working with people that I know and love and respect, that I've gotten to know over the course of the last decade or so, that are just genuinely wonderful human beings. And, I tell every time I do a lecture, I just say, you know, the happiest people I know are obsessed with death. But it's not just death. It's the search for validation of an afterlife. That's why all of us do what we do. That's why I shared our story after more than 30 years of keeping it right within our own circle of our family and friends. Only the people that had actually experienced the house knew of the things that happened to us, our immediate and some extended family, most extended family, and our friends. And so after all these years, it just came time to tell the story, but The Conjuring barely scratches the surface. Yes, there are elements of the film that are accurate. There are elements of the film that are absolutely precise, but it's about 5% of the movie. And the rest of it has been conjured in the heads of two very well-meaning screenwriters that were so overwhelmed by the books and so harnessed by the people who thought telling the truth would be too overwhelming for the audience. You know, even Hollywood executives are still fear-based carbon units, and it's because they're human beings. We're all afraid of something, you know, and it was too intense for them. And so, you know, by all right, you know, they could cut anything out of the script. It was their script. They could shift it this way or shift it that way. But the film left you with overarching impressions that good conquers evil and love conquers fear, and that my family had a supreme close encounter with spirit in the farmhouse in Harrisville, and we all survived. And it was the love in our family. It's really essentially a love story. And that's what the overarching themes of The Conjuring is. Those are the impressions that it leaves, I think, with most viewers, even if it's on a subliminal level. But there is so much more beauty and light to the story than ever gets told in a horror movie. It's just impossible to, you know, in some ways, even though it's three-dimensional on a screen, it's a one-dimensional telling of the tale. You know, we were in that house for 10 years, and the Warrens came 6 times over the course of a year and a half. There were many things that happened in the house that they never even knew about. So this is an opportunity for me over the course of 8 days to answer the questions of people that are in the chat, that are calling in, and to engage with people. And that will be true for every single speaker that they bring on over the course of those 8 days. And each will bring their own fresh perspective to the event. And I think that it's going to be a wonderful way for anyone who wants to engage, you know, with those that they love and admire in the field, to be able to interact with them in a virtual, you know, virtual land, you know, brand new, untested. Or, well, we're going to test it before we do it, but
yeah.
You know, this is a new thing. And I think it's a brilliant thing, and it'll be wonderful to see so many of my friends, even if it's in a little cube on a box on a screen. You know, we all feel so isolated from each other, and the paranormal community worldwide is actually very engaged and very integrated in many ways. And so it's an opportunity for us to have a grand get-together without having to hug one another. And you know, if you go to Paracons regularly, there's an awful lot of hugging and kissing going on.
Now, you said earlier about how things got much worse when the Warrens did the seance. Now, they're planning to do a seance during this, aren't they?
Well, you know, I didn't know about that until yesterday, and I made my feelings known about that, because that's not something that I would participate in. And I might not even watch, because it will, it's a little PTSD, you know, I don't want to relive that trauma. And, you know, I don't have the full itinerary in front of me. I don't know where they're going to plug me in, when they want me to talk, what they want me to talk about. All of that will be given to me on the, you know, probably the day before we launch it. And, you know, I fingers crossed and hoping for the best, because if we do this right, it really establishes a new template. But, you know, the Heinzens have offered up their house as the setting for this, and it's not my house anymore. It's theirs, and this is an event that serves me in that if anything happens, it validates. And if it's different than things that have happened to my family, all the better. You know, is their family energy stirring up stuff that ours didn't, you know, or are they like events? I mean, there's so many questions to ask about this. Anybody that's curious about this and about, you know, investigating, I don't call it ghost hunting. That's very aggressive and unnecessarily threatening. So what I do, I just don't like the vernacular of it. And the original Ghost Hunter producers know exactly how I feel about that. And, you know, they said they were sorry. I don't even know if they meant it, but they said it. You know, anyway, conducting investigations is a serious thing, you know, and there are an awful lot of people that kind of fool around with this field, and they need to know that it's not something to fool around with, that you should take it seriously, because, you know, I don't tolerate any provoking. There can be no provoking. That's absolutely unacceptable. You know, as my mother said many, many decades ago, when she realized that we were not living there alone, she said, you know, we always have to be respectful no matter what happens, because this was their house first and we're the intruders. And that stuck with me my whole life, because it shifted my personal paradigm in terms of understanding that I was living in a multidimensional universe instead of a three-dimensional world.
All right. Now, the live 24/7 feed of the house is going to start on May 9th. And a portion of the proceeds will be donated to three different COVID-19 related charities.
Yes. I'm so delighted about that.
Yeah, they're going to be donated to the World Central Kitchen, the Gary Sinise Foundation, and Global Giving.
Yeah, it's great. And I would expect nothing less from the people that I'm working with. You know, just think of the homeless shelters that we need right now for people suffering on the streets with no help. Think of the food banks. Think of the lines you're seeing when you turn on the news. Oh, Mother of God. I mean, we're in deep and getting deeper. And this is an opportunity for us to talk about that too. Talk about, you know, to really address, you know, life and death in the age of COVID-19. This is the paradigm shift. These are things that I need to talk about with my people. And so for the next week or so, I'll be gathering with my people from all over the world in my childhood home and sharing it and what energy they can pick up from it, even from such a distance. And I think it's a marvelous thing, and I'm very pleased and proud to be associated with it and to have been asked to do it.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. I can't wait to check it out. We're going to sign up and check it out as much as we can.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. We all appreciate that. The first day is free, so everybody can, like, you know, test it and see if it's something that they're interested in doing. Or you can grab your tickets now, and I think it's $14.99 for the whole week. And, you know, they tried to keep it as affordable as humanly possible. It cost them a lot to put this together.
Oh,
and,
I'm sure, yeah.
You know, yeah. Well, all the new IT alone, I mean, that was, I had nothing to do with that. I had absolutely nothing to do with that. I barely know how to turn my own computer on. However, there was a lot involved. And, you know, this is, we just wanted to make sure people, it's tight for everybody, you know, so make it affordable so that people can have this great distraction where instead of coming home and watching Netflix, they can hop on the link that's open on their computer and watch some more of what's going on at the farmhouse and listen to some of their favorite speakers and hop in the chat room and ask questions. And, you know, I just want it to be some light in a very dark time. That's all I want. If we accomplish that, I'll be happy.
Thank you so much for sharing your story and being part of this very unique opportunity that's going to be offered soon. If anyone would like to check out the true story of the House of Darkness, of Andrea's Perron's family, you can check out her website, House of Darkness, houseoflight.com, where you can purchase.
No, you can't purchase my books there. No,
okay.
Absolutely. I disabled that button right from the beginning. No, the only way to get them is directly from me, and people can hop on my Buttercup Brigade, and I'll be happy to ship books out. I sell books out of my home, but otherwise they can get them on Amazon or through any of the major booksellers have access to them. But, yeah, no, I couldn't do it on my website because that's all that I would do is, yeah, I would never have written any more books. So, yeah, no, but thanks for saying, you know, that my website is there, even though it's very old and stale and needs to be completely refreshed. So don't pay much attention to it. The best thing if people want to get in touch with me is I have 5 pages or 6 pages on Facebook, my main page, and predominantly my fan page, the Buttercup Brigade, the Good Deed Doers page. That's on Facebook, and that's the best, fastest way to get in touch with me.
Okay.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to join you tonight. And
yep.
Betty, I just want you to know, I know somebody that thinks the world of you.
Oh.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I pre-loved you because of all the nice things she said about you. So you rock on. Rock on.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, sweetheart. Thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you for coming on.
Okay.
You have a great night.
Good night.
And now, folks, it's time to say good night. We sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night.